Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Samach Daled, and we are holding, actually, finally, on Samach Daled. We're on Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af HaTamid. So we finished, yesterday we finished the way in which we could learn those two brightot, to see whether Malika is included and whether we're talking about other korbanos as well. The machlok is about Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, whether during Pesach there would be a chiyuv on any korban that would be shechted ala chametz and so on. Now we're getting back to the Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda said af hatamid, so that if the korban tamid was nishchat ala chametz on erev Pesach, so according to Rabbi Yehuda there would be a chiyuv even on the korban tamid, which is remarkable. Where would that come from? My taima, the Rabbi Yehuda, doesn't it talk about the korban Pesach? No, actually, it says in the pasuk beferish that lo tishchat ala chametz dam zivchi. Now, what is zivchi? There's actually only one korban. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls it my own special korban, and that's the korban tamid, which is the lachmi, it's called. And therefore, lachmi would mean that's the zevach amiyuchadli. And there, it's got to be referring to the tamid. Umayniyu tamid, because we say korbani lachmi li ishai. It's about as personal as you can get. Rabbi Shimon says, the Pesach, you're chayev on the 14th, and any other korban, you would be chayev if you shechted on a chometz during the yontiv. Now, where do we get that from? My time in Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon says, well, in the pasuk of Zivchi is actually repeated two times. One, of course, is in this week's parsha, Lo tizbach al hachametz dam zivchi, v'lo yalin chelav chagi ad boker. But then remember that in Kitisa, after the Shviras Haluchos and the rebuilding of the Bris, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mentions this again, Lo tishchat al hachametz dam zivchi, v'lo yalin la boker zevach chag ha-pasach. So what exactly are those two things? Okay, so he says, what we do is we darshan the yud of the zivchi that is written in our parsha, put it together with the yud in Kitisa, and we end up with zvachai. And therefore, lo tishchat al chametz dam zvachai, v'lo yalin laboker zevach chag ha-pasach, is comparing all my korbanos, any korban at all that is brought, is the same as the Zevach Chag HaPesach during Pesach. So then why not just simply put it together? So we read it both Zevach, one Pesach then loses the Yud and is called Zevach. That means only one Korban. And the other is all Korbanos. So Rabbi Shimon comes out, therefore, in two ways, different from the way Rabbi Yehuda reads the Pesach. Now, the only reason that I know that there is a difference between before Pesach and during Pesach is because otherwise, what would be the point of doing it in this strange way? This is called Gorin Umosifim, that you're able to take a letter from one word where it's simply repetitive and put it onto another word. How can you do that? Because it's one of the midas. But, I mean, it's a very inefficient way, you would think, of darshaning. Why couldn't the Pesach simply say in one Pesach, Zvachai? And then I would know that Zvachai are together with the Korban Pesach and have the same din. Because that's the whole point. The Meimar, the Bizman de'ika Zevach lo mechayev Zvachai. One of the psukim insists that, look, there's going to be some time where it's only the Zevach. And when is that? That's when it's time to bring the actual Korban Pesach on the 14th. And if in the other hand, Bisman de Leka Zevach, if it isn't mine, then it's Zvachai, but that means that they're mutually exclusive. So where there's an Isser to be Shochet the Pesach itself with the Chametz, when is that? That's only on Erev Pesach. Then it's only a Zevach. But when you're talking about the time in which it's no longer time for the Korban Pesach, then you have all Zvachai, which are then the same. And therefore, B'moed, the din would be your Chayev on all. And then, just to wrap up, Rabbi Shimon goes on to say, so b'moed lishmo patur. If, therefore, you would shecht the Korban Pesach as a Pesach, you would be patur, because remember that Rabbi Shimon holds what in terms of shchita? Shchita she'ena ru'uya lav shma shchita. So I did not do the Zevach in that case because I ruined the Korban. But if he does it Shalom Lishma, and at that point the Korban Pesach is a Shlamim, then he is Chayev. Okay, so now it seems pretty clear from here that the only reason that we say that the Shechet is Chayev during the Chol HaMoed is because he had a specific intention to shechted shelo lishmo. Suppose he wouldn't have. Suppose he just went right ahead and he shechted the Korban Pesach without specifying. What would be the din then? So then the halachash appears to be that he would be punter, and it would be considered to be a Korban Pesach, and therefore shechting a Korban Pesach shelo bismano is pasul. And if that's the case, then it's a shechita shein eruya, which would explain why it's pater. But why? I thought that a Korban Pesach automatically becomes a Korban Shlamim when it's no longer the time for Pesach. Isn't that what we've been saying all along? That shelo lishmo, a Pesach is a Shlamim. And we had before that if it's a Pesach Shavra Shenata, it's automatically a Shlamim. So why is it that if it's after the 14th, what in the world am I going to do with this Pesach? By the time next Pesach rolls around, this Korban is going to be too old to be a Korban Pesach, right? So it's definitely not suited to be a Pesach. Okay, so what is it? It's clearly a Shlamim. So why does he not say in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon, that if I shechted it stam, I would be chayev, since stam is also a shlamim, unless you're ready to conclude that there's a difference between, as Tosef understands it earlier, that there's a difference between a Pesach that is too old currently for the Korban, in which case over there it really is automatically a shlamim, and a Pesach that is at this point roi for a Korban Pesach, and it's not in a matzav which it's too old, which is mashma Pesach b'shar yemot hashana shlamim ave, and that would mean, that Pesach requires b'shar yemot hashana requires akira, and is not a shlamim without my having a specific statement that says I am making this into a shlamim. If I don't say that, then I need to assume that it's not a shlamim. Omer Rabbi Chiya bar Gamda nizraka mipi chabura. It actually turned out to be the opinion of everybody that we were learning together, and when we were learning this Mishnah, not necessarily, because it's certainly an alternative explanation. An alternative explanation is that it's possible, and in order to cover all cases, therefore we included this case, it's possible to have a case where you do need to have Akira. But that would be maybe only in a case where the owners of this Korban Pesach became Tamei. And since they became Tomei, they're going to be bringing this very same Korban that they had originally intended to bring on Pesach and then unfortunately were unable to bring it because they personally became Tomei. So they are Nidachim LePesach Sheni. And what will they bring on Pesach Sheni? Their original Korban. Korban has become Paltzer because they became Tomei. So we'll keep it and we'll wait until Pesach Sheni a month later and then we'll bring it for a Korban Pesach. Therefore, you cannot say that a Pesach like that automatically loses its Pesach status and becomes a Korban Shlamim, because it is currently still Omei to be brought as a Korban Pesach in another few days. And therefore, there it's Stam Elashum Pesach Koy. That's why Rabbi Shimon says, look, if you specifically intended, then that would, that it should be Lashum Pesach. So then, Eino Chinami, that would cover all cases. Okay. And now we are ready for our Capitan, if he will show up. Let's see if we can draw him out. Capitan. Rebbe, what's your opinion about that flat? HaPesach Nishrat B'Shalosh Kitot. So we're moving on now to the actual Hakrovas HaKorban. We were talked until this point about the Shechita and so on. Now we want to talk about the overall process. How exactly, in practical terms, you're arriving at the Beit HaMikdash, it's Erev Pesach, you've got your Korban Pesach, what happens next? So a Pesach nishkat b'shalosh kitot. Shenema v'shachatu oto kol kahal adat Yisrael. Those are three words, and each one of them is found in other places in the Torah alone. So that would mean you sometimes refer to it in a Eidah, you sometimes refer to a Kahal, you sometimes refer to Yisrael. And therefore, by mentioning all three pronouns, what we're talking about is essentially a three times over process. So in other words, we would do the entire following process three times every Erev Pesach. We split up the people so that they would come in separate groups. We're going to have everybody do the Korban Pesach at once. So first, the Kat Rishana, the earliest people to arrive, they came in. As soon as the Azorah was filled up, at that point, the Nalu Daltot Azorah, they closed the gates. Nobody knew could come in. And at that point, they did the Tkiah and the Trua and the Tkiah that is done for the Korbanos, as if this, because since a Korban Pesach has certain similarities to the Korban Tzibur, because it's brought together as a group, for the dinim of Tkiah, we gave it the same chashivas that we give to a Korban Tzibur, and we do the Tkiahs that we would do on a Korban Tzibur. A Kohanim Omdim Shurot Shurot. Now, all the Kohanim are in a line, many lines that are one next to each other. And these two shurot would be going from the Mokam HaShechita all the way up to the Mizbeach. And they would have alternating rows. One row, would everybody would be holding Bezichim of Kesev. And in the other row, they would be holding Bezichei Zahav. They would not mix it. So you have a row that was all silver, a row that was all gold, a row that was all silver, a row that was all gold. And you did not mix them together. And the Gemara will discuss why not. V'lo hayu lebezichin shulayim, these bowls or cups that were used to be mekabel the dam, they did not have any kind of base that you could set them down on. They were rounded at the bottom so that if you would set them down, they would fall over. And the reason that they did this is because since this was such a busy time in which they had an assembly line, and as you know, in an assembly line, if anything, if you falter for a moment, you mess up the entire rhythm of the line. So they were afraid that if anything happened, that the Kohen would think, oh my God, I'm going to spill it. I better put it down, grab the next one, and I'll get back to it. But then he won't get back to it because he's going to get so involved in his assembly line that in the end, the dam, shema yanichum v'yikarei shadam. They were worried that the blood is going to end up congealing, and then by the time we realize, oh my God, I never poured that one out on the Mizbeach, so then it will already be pasul. As you know, in practical terms, on this type of assembly line, let's say they use these assembly lines for the Shechita of Ofos. So basically, you have the birds that are circling along on a conveyor, and it's lined with Kayanim, so to speak, the Shechtim line along the line as the birds go by. So over there, if you don't have time to shecht, which is about a tenth of a second, you let that bird go and move on to the next bird, and then somebody down the line gets it. Okay, but how are you going to do that over here unless you set down the dam? So there, you're going to have a problem. Now, a Yisrael could shecht it, so the Yisrael would shecht the carbon, but the Kohen would be mekabel the dam, and that would be the first Kohen, the closest one to the Shechita. He would hand it to the next Kohen down. That Kohen would hand it to the next Kohen down until it would finally got to the Mizbeach. And meanwhile, as you handed one that was full, you would hand back one that was empty so that everybody was moving constantly, whoop, 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 handing back. And the empty ones, meanwhile, were going in one direction. The full ones were going in the other direction. And, whoo, you better not lose your concentration. So, kibel a kohen, etno lechaviro, chaviro lechaviro, mikabel tamalei, machzir tareikan. So he would first take the full cup that was being offered to him and pass it on before taking the empty one and passing it down. Kohina Karove to Mizbeach, and then the last Kohen on the row who was right next to the Mizbeach, he would be Zorek Zrika Achat Kneged HaYesod. Now, this means that he would actually throw the dam. He would not pour it, even though it says Veshafach. As we'll see, it does not mean that he would go to the Mizbeach, pour it gently along the Yesod, directly to the Yesod. It means he would throw it on the side of the Mizbeach, and from there the dam would go down to the Yesod, which would mean that it would have to be on one of the sides of the Mizbeach that has Yesod. You will recall that because of the problem of the Chelek of Yehuda taking up part of the bottom of the Yesod of the Mizbeach, they did not put a Yesod in the Chelek that was in Yehuda. Yatzta kat rishona. Okay, so when they were finished, the first kat would go out, the second group would come in, and they would do the same thing. The second group would come out, when they finished, and then Nichlas HaShlishit, and whatever was done in that first one that we described to you was done in the last two. So it was exactly the same. Kemaaseh HaRishona, Kach Maaseh HaShniya, VaHashlishit. Now, they were Korei the Hallel, so each one of the Kitot would read the Hallel. So Rashi is Mashma, and indeed we find this in some of the Rishonim Beferish, it was the people that were doing bringing the carbon, and they were doing the shechita, they would say hallel. Tosfos says it means the Levian would say hallel. The Brisker Rav says that there are no stiras here at all. There were two hallels. There was one din of hallel that is being said as the Avodas HaLevian, which is Avodah LaAvodah for the carbon. And then there was the hallel, which is called Halal HaMitzra, for the Simcha of the Yisrael that were bringing the carbon. That's a completely different hallel, and that's the hallel that we say, as we're davening before Erev Pesach, we say, or at least many have the minhag to say hallel, that would be connected that hallel, those other halachic reasons and so on, to say it, the Gabi, the Brocha. And then they read through the entire hallel. Now, if the kat had not finished doing everything they needed to do, by the time they finished the hallel, they would say hallel again. And if they finished hallel the second time, then they would say hallel the third time. And that the truth is that never happened. I mean, there's a theory. Alpha Pishalo shall shoot me in mayhem. The fact is that it was an extremely efficient process bringing the carbon. And they were able to bring millions of these carbonas, as we'll see, because of these assembly lines. And because of that, they never really got to a point where they would ever have to say the hallel over the third time. Rabbi Yehuda says, look, forget about that. I mean, the third kat, which were known as the lazy bones kat, as we'll see in the Gemara later. So the lazy bones kat never even got to the point where they would be reading, and the first time they read it, they never got to a haftiki shma Hashem eskoli tachanunai. That was they'd already finished. So that's how effective it was. Mipnesha amam muatim. Not many people waited to be part of the lazy people. Everybody tried to be nizdarez in order to get things done quickly. Now this, what we just described, k'maaseu b'chol, kach maaseu b'shabbat. Everything was done exactly the same way, except that there was an issue, and that was that the Kohanim on Shabbat were medichin et hazara shelo b'ritzon chachamim. The Kohanim, they went ahead and they stopped up the water. Remember, there was an ama that was going through the azara, which normally, whenever they needed to clean out the azara, they would simply put in the plug, and all that water would start overflowing, would fill up the entire azara, and then they would let the plug out, and then everything would be washed out. Now, they washed, remember, when you do something like that, as Reb Shlomo Zalman points out, you still need a sponge stick, right? Because, I mean, you can't just, I mean, let the water out. It's not going to be clean unless you also sweep the water out as it's going out, obviously. And that is a problem on Shabbos because of the fact that even where, as Tosis points out, there ought to be no problem over here because of the fact that it was completely covered with a stone. And if it's covered with stone, then there's no chashash of being mashveh gumais. Okay, but nonetheless, the Chachomim asered doing this on Shabbos from a chashash of ashvuyeh gumais. And therefore, the Chachomim said, you shouldn't do this. But the Kohanim didn't listen to them. And though they went ahead and they would do it without the Ritzon of the Chachomim, so that would have been a difference between Maaseh B'Chol and Maaseh B'Shabbos, except it wasn't because nobody paid any attention to the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says you have to know something, that all of this dam that was on the floor, remember, it wasn't just the normal dam that would make things dirty like during the week. Because what they would do is when they sealed off the Azara drain, not the drain to the Amma, all of the blood started rising on the floor. And that would mean that you had a lot of blood. None of the blood would go out on its own. And they would be Mamale Kosechad Midama Tarovet and Zerakot Zrikachat Agabe HaMizbeach. So what they would do is they would fill up one kos of dam and pour it out on the Mizbeach to actually make certain that even if some of the blood spilled out of the kos and there was an accident, that blood, at least some molecule of that blood, would end up getting onto the Mizbeach. But the Chachomim did not agree with him about this either, and we're going to see in the Gemara the whole discussion between the Chachomim and Reb Yehuda. Anyway, Ketzat Tolinu Mafshitin. Now, the next thing that the people would have to do after they completed their Shechita, and of course the Kohanim had taken the dam and it put the dam on the Mizbeach, now you have your animal in your hands, that you shechted. The next thing you got to do is you have to be tole, you have to hang it up in order to be mafshit it, and you have to take out the emurim in order that it should be ready to be put on the Mizbeach. So how did they do that? Well, normally, obviously it would depend if the Beis HaMikdash had sufficient room for everybody, which would be rare in the first few kitot. So normally you would have unkoliot shel barzela yukvuim b'kotalim uba amudim. So we know that there was a special place, which was the Beit HaMitbachayim, which was to the Tzofein, and over there they would have these special pillars that you would have the arazim. They would have these big heavy-duty 2x4s that would be going across them, and they had these hooks that were in them, and that usually, on a normal day, that would be able to handle the pressure of the hafshata. Obviously, when we have millions of people coming in, you couldn't really use those for everyone. So kol mi she'ein lo makom litlot v'lahafshit, anybody who could not find an empty hook, there was an alternative. And the alternative was maklot takim v'chalakim hayusham, miniach ha'ktefo v'ha'ketef chavero, v'toleo mafshit. So you had these pieces of wood that had been smoothed, and you would put one on your shoulder and one on another person from your chabura, and you would hang up your carbon pesach, then you would be able to, remember we're talking about a small, it's within its first year, a couple months old, sheep, and you're able to skin it, and at that point, you'd be able to take out the insides as well. And Rabbi Elazar says, it should, in some of the Girsaot, if the 14th, however, came out on a Shabbos, then you couldn't do this. Now, you remember back in Masechet Shabbos, we had that Rabbi Elazar says that this din of maklot, which we're about to learn, was said during the earlier stages of the Isra of Muktzah. Remember, we went through many stages of Muktzah, where first, in order to establish the Chumrah of the problem of carrying and so on, so everything was Muktzah. Even a fork in your drawer was Muktzah. You couldn't take out a fork to spear something that wasn't normally what you would be eating with a fork. And that was the most Chomor period of Muktzah. And then remember, they went through stage after stage until finally, in our times, there is almost no Muktzah at all. We just have a few very special cases of Muktzah. I mean, we do have an idea of a Kli, Shemalach Toli Yisra, and so on, but that is not what was called Muktzah. I mean, because you can use it in the end. Use anything you want, unless it's Muktzah Machmas Chisar and Kis, that we still have, but that's because you are Mekatzea yourself. But the concept of Muktzah, there's an ipso facto automatic Yisra on all things that are not being used for the primary purpose for which they were manufactured. That did not exist. But at that time, it did exist still. So maklot, said Reb Elazar back in Shabbos, this din of the maklot was said before they were matir muktzah as in our times where we don't really have muktzah almost at all. And because of that, you couldn't use those maklot at that time. And therefore, miniach yado al ketef chavero, v'yad chavero al ketefa. So then you would use one hand as the makel. You'd put one hand on the other guy's shoulder, the other guy would put one hand on your shoulder, and then you both had one hand free in order to do the hafshata. Okay, moving on, kira'o, so then you, after taking off the skin, so then you would cut open the actual body, otziat emurav, so you would take out whatever it is you had to take out, you would take out the kloyot, and you would take out the diaphragm, you would take out the piece of the liver that was attached to the diaphragm, and so on. And of course, you had, if you're talking about a sheep, you also had the fat tail of the sheep, fine. But whatever it is, you would take and you would put them into a mages, which is this big bowl. And then hikdiran agabe mizbeach, we would burn them on the mizbeach. And then, if it was Shabbos, you couldn't go home. Uh-oh. Because how are you going to carry your Korban Pesach home? So what do? So yatztakat rishona. So when the first group went out, they stayed there, and they went all the way out to the edge of the Har HaBayit, which was all one rishos. And then when the second group came out, they stayed closer to the Azorah in the area that was called the Chel. That's where they had that very low symbolic wall, right, which was 10 amas away. And then the last cut would actually just stay there. So HaShlishit b'mekuma omedet until it was after Tzisa Kochovim. Then they could carry, and then they could bring their Korban Pesach home, and they could go ahead and roast it. So Yatsu v'tzalu et pischehem, and that was the Seder Hayom. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, like, where do we get all of this from? Like the Shalosh Kitot. So, Eina Pesach Nishchat Ela B'Shalosh Kitot, Shel Shloshim, Shloshim B'nei Adam. But you need to know that there is a minimum of 30 people in each one of those. Now, where do you get that from? My time. Well, look, it does say Kahal, Eda, and Yisrael, right? Now, there's two ways of understanding that Kahal, Eda, and Yisrael. It could mean that in order to shecht the Korban Pesach, you need to have a combination of Kahal, Eda, and Yisrael. That is to say, 10 times 3. Each one of these is a minimum of 10, which we learn out from Sukkot, Matai Le'eda, Hara'a, Azot, and so on. So each one of these is 10. And the question is whether this means you need 30 people at one time, or does it mean you need 3 groups, each one of which is 10? So since we don't know, what we really need to do is to have 3 groups at least. And we need to have 30 in each one of those groups, just in case the din is that the korban is only nishchat in the presence of 30 people. So in order to be yotzei ar safek, because of that, we need 3 groups of 30. So hilkach binan shalosh kitot, shloshim shloshim b'nei adam, and that way you don't get into each in trouble. Because look, if it means that at one time you need 30, okay, so I have 30. If it means that you need to have 3 different groups, I have 3 different groups, and that way I'm yotze. And look, since this whole thing is based on a suffix, it's not that I'm really saying that you need 30 people, mi'ikar adin, in each one of shalosh kitos. So the bottom line is, if you've got just 50 people, you don't need 90 people. If you got 50 people, then you would be able to be yotze your chiyav. Why? Because, look, you don't need everybody to be shechting in order to have 30 people, right? So you have your first 30 come in. They do their Korban Pesach, and then only 10 people walk out. And then 10 new people form the 30 people together with the 20 that were there, because you definitely now have, if it meant that you need 3 groups of 10, so you've got your new group of 10. If it means that you're mechuyev to shecht your Korban Pesach within a group of 30 people, you've got 30 people there. Then these people go out and now come in the new 10, which is the new cut, assuming that that's what it means. And if it isn't what it meant, and it just meant you need to have 30 people, so you do have 30 people. So basically, you could be yotzei the safek just with 50 people. Okay, then we say Nichmas Akat Rishona and the Daltota Azara Renin Allah. Now, how do we read the Mishnah? So Bias says we read the Mishnah in the passive. Nin Alu means that they closed. If they closed passively, how did they close passively? So they didn't have any kind of electronic sensor on the door with a little motor. So they must have closed with a nace. so that once the Azara was filled, the doors would shut. Whereas Rava says, no, it means that the Levim who were in charge closed the gates like normal people. No miracles. Goldsteins, please mute. Whap. Do I have to mute you? I guess so. All right. So, what's the difference? What are they arguing in other words? They're arguing about whether you have a right to be somech on a nes. The problem is over here, look, I mean, you're supposed to be making absolutely certain that you're going to have 30 people for the next group, right? Now, I mean, am I allowed to just turn around and read a book while letting the Azara take care of itself? And we know if there's only going to be 30 people left, then the doors will automatically lock and you won't be able to get in because the Azara will make sure that there are people that are going to be due in, right? Or do I have to count and I have to make certain that I'm going to be able to have my three groups? So Abaya says, look, they closed automatically. That means just whatever. Whoever comes in, and you rely on the nace that these gates are going to shut at the point that they need to. Rava says, no, you don't rely on miracles. You have to go and close the gate according to your best judgment to make sure that you've got the correct number of people that are still going to be left outside. Interestingly, there's a question about how to read the Mishnah in that famous story of Rabbi Yehuda, where, remember, it says over there that, according to some, Akavya ben Mahalalel spoke without derech eretz about Shmaya v'Avtalion, and he said, Dugma Yishkua, that, well, they gave the Mashka v'Meseta to people like themselves. Since they were Gerim, therefore they gave it to this Isha that was a Gioret, and people thought that was an incredible chutzpah. How do you refer to, as if it's like somewhat lower that you're a Ger, and therefore they gave it like to a Gioret, and a normal person wouldn't have done such a thing? There's this beautiful tshuva of the Rambam that talks about exactly this issue where a certain Ger wrote him a letter that he had made a comment and his Rebbe had argued with him and he called him a Kseel and what a fool you are. And he thought he was right and his Rebbe was wrong. And does he have a right to tell his Rebbe that he spoke to him without derech eretz? And this guy is a Ger, so the Rebbe's making fun of him. Where would you know anything? So the Rambam goes wild and he writes, I mean, it's absolutely beautiful, beautiful letter. And he writes, I mean, look, maybe your Rebbe was dead drunk when he did that. I mean, no normal human being would do such a thing. How could you possibly call a Ger a Kseel? The right letters are not Kseel, it's Maskeel. Because if the guy is so brilliant that he was just as smart as Avram Avinu and managed to figure out on his own what he's supposed to be doing, you have to be insane to call somebody like that a Kseel. So maybe he's not insane, maybe he's just drunk, you know. But in any event, and then he gives this guy such incredible encouragement about his Madrega and how his Rebbe owes him a big, you know, Bakosha of Mechila and Slicha, and how could he possibly have forgotten the level of covet and love that you have to treat a Ger, even if it would have been true that you were a Kseel? What is he, nuts? You're not allowed to say that? And so on and so forth. It was very, really beautiful. So Rabbi Yehuda has the same reaction. You're going to say that Akavya ben Mahalalel was drunk also, like this guy? I mean, Chas v'Chalila. Chas v'Sholem, that according to the first pshat, they were so angry at Akavya ben Mahalalel that they put him into Nidui. So Rabbi Yehuda said, Chas v'Sholem sh'Akavya ben Mahalalel nitnada. Now here's where we get into this question. It's completely tangential, right? But the thing is that he used the following words. She'ein azara ninelet al kol adam b'Yisrael b'chuchma b'yirat chet k'Akavya ben Mahalalel. If you want to talk about a time in which you can see the madrega of every individual, because all of Klal Yisrael is there, it would be at the bringing of the Karban Pesach. And there was no one that those doors shut on. Ah, shut on. What do you mean, shut on? Shut on by themselves or were shut on by someone? Aha, well, that's what we want to know. So anyway, but there was no one in the world that these doors were shut on who was on the Madrega of Chochma Nirashet, like Akavya ben Mahalalel. And to say that Akavya ben Mahalalel would have done is ridiculous. So How do we read that word ninelet? Well, Abaya reads it according to his svar, and Rava reads it according to his svar. Abaya says it means there was no one at the time that the doors shut. That's what it means. And Rava says, you don't have to read it like that. You could read it. Because, I mean, in this case, all we want to know is that the doors were shut. The fact that they were shut by others or shut on their own doesn't change the word ninelet. And therefore, you simply read it. There's no magic. It's b'chokhma b'yerashchet kavya ben mehalalel. Tana Rabbanan, me'olam lo nitma'ech adam ba'azara. Now, of course, there would be another issue over here. If you're going to rely on these doors, and you're not supposed to be relying on a nace, then you could run into some serious problems. Actually, there's some who learn that the idea over here of the Simchim al Hanes has to do with the question of whether the Azara, even when it's full, ends up allowing you extra room. Because even like we find on Yom Kippur, that there were Omdim Tzefufim, and there were Mishtachavim B'Revacha. So the question is whether one of the things you need to take into consideration is like, you can't just keep pushing people in there. I mean, you got to be able to move your arms and do the Shechita and so on, right? So the other issue would be, I mean, it's also dangerous. I mean, how can you have so many people that are moving around and you have some poor guy who can barely breathe and nobody even notices that the guy ends up being choked to death? And I mean, so that's also being Semich on a Nes. So what about that? So the Rabbanan say, the truth is that there never was an event in which anybody was hurt in the Azor except one time. Chutz v'Pesach Echad, and that was during the time of Hillel HaZaken, and there was an old guy who was crushed to death in the Azor, and they always referred to that Pesach as the Pesach Mu'uchin. That was the crushing Pesach because it was viewed as such a keshel. Question is whether there's a remez over here to Micha, of Moshe Rabbeinu's Micha, Hatzelo Hitzalta Tamecha, can I get the doors of the Azara in this case? But anyway, so because normally you could rely on it, so that would allow you to rely on it. Also, there's some who say that even though we paskin in Somchem al Anes, the question is whether a Anes that happens bikfiyut, the question is why in Somchem al Anes? So if Ein Somchem al Anes has to do with this getter of chutzpah and believing that you are roi for the nes and it's mitam lo yid boshashu and so on, that would be one issue. The other question is whether it's a general anhaga that you don't have a right, you have a chiev to do what needs to be done. It has nothing to do with the question of whether you will get the nes, and that's not so partial. So some are machalic between a nes that was part of the standardized behavior, like over here, where always the daltot ha'azara would close on their own, whether that would also be included in the question of lo yid boshashu. That's a different issue. Okay, anyway, continuing on. And there was also, says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, there was once a maisa with Agrippas HaMelech, and he wanted very much to get a sense of how many people had come up to the Beis HaMikdash to bring a Korban Pesach. So he told the Kohen Gadol, Tein Einecha Bapsachim, keep account of the number of Korbanas that are being brought. So what did he do? The Kohen would see to it that not akulya mikol echad, he took a kidney from each one of those korbanas, and then when they counted them, they found that there were 600,000 pairs of kidneys, which means that there was 200,000 korbanas, kiflayim kiyotzi mitzrayim, which was double the number of people that we counted in the midbar. And this doesn't include anybody that couldn't come because he was Tamei or he was Bederech Rechoka. Plus, you're not taking into consideration that a Korban Pesach was not eaten by a single individual. I think the only time they had a mitzvah like that was Moshe Forman brought a Korban Pesach and finished the entire thing on his own. But generally speaking, you needed 10 people to finish a Korban Pesach. So it was at least, I mean, there was no Pesach. Shalonimnu alav yotermi asara b'nei adam. There were 10 plus people on every Korban, which would mean that there were 12 million people that were up there bringing their Korban Pesach to eat in Yerushalayim. And that they called the Pesach Mu'uvim. And this is the lashon of that we had before about whether you're allowed to have a tanur with the dough that is mu'uvim. We said mu'uvim means a lot of a lot of challah doesn't mean a very thick dough. So over here, the same thing. There were a lot of people, so they called it the thick Pesach, because I had to handle so many people. What are you talking about, man? You can't take a kulia out of the Karban Pesach. That's one of the Emurim. It has to be brought on the Mizbeach. It's a crazy story. What do you mean, not al kulia? Oh, boy, akturi. You needed to be put on the Mizbeach. Well, obviously, afterwards, it was put on the Mizbeach. Yeah, but that doesn't help you, because it says vihiktiro, means it has to be brought on its own. Not like, we don't bring up a bunch of parts on the Mizbeach. What are you talking about? Of your used auto parts in a junk store? It says vihikrivo means a carbon is brought with carbon. This is this particular carbon. And then throwing it up on the Mizbeach with another 600,000 klayot. You're not allowed to mix one piece of a carbon with another carbon. Okay, fine. So they brought each one up separately. Even that doesn't help, because it also says in the pasuk that there's a lashon of vihiktiram hakohen amizbeach lechem isher. Vihiktiram means all of those parts listed in the Emurim have to be brought up together. So how can you tell me that he had a separate haktara of these kidneys? You can't do that. You need sheikula ke'echad. So what it means is that he took a kloya for a moment until something else replaced it. That was the point. So in other words, he shows it to this other guy. This other guy's got a counter, right? And he's got like a bunch of these little stones or whatever. And so he would lift up the kloya. The guy would show him that he's counting it, put in another stone into the counter, and then the kloya would go together with the rest of it. And then they add the avilei midiachrina to show, to make sure that they didn't miss any. That's what it means. But of course it was brought together with the emurim of that same carbon. And then it says, you need to have the kohanim, one row was silver and one row was gold, and you weren't allowed to mix it. Why are we not allowed to mix it? Maybe it would mean that he'll take one of the empty cups that's made out of gold, but he'll give him back one that was made out of kesev, and then that would be moridin bakodesh, because the gold is going one way, he's giving him now something silver in return, and that you're not allowed to do, because malin bakodesh v'lo moridin, you don't give something that was less valuable. I mean, if that would be the case, you'd have the same problem, even if it was all gold, because maybe one of them was made out of this very expensive gold. Remember, these could be matanais that people had made with beautiful work. I mean, one may be worth $1 million. The other one may be worth $150. I mean, so isn't that going to be the same problem of marlin or moridin? Dil me shakli bar matan, or marli bar mea. By the way, there's some rishonim who have very sad approach, which is really the simple meaning, that it's not a function of mal and morin, and it's a function of stealing, that we're worried that somebody will put an expensive one in his pocket, walk off with the Da Vinci, and replace it with a replacement lower-class one, and therefore we needed to make certain that wouldn't be possible. So if that's the problem, so then you would have the same problem if it was all gold. It's simply a matter of aesthetics. That's all. It looks really nice when you're looking in your, you know, they would take drone pictures of the Karban Pesach and it would send it around. So when you're looking at all of this, I mean, it's like really striking. You see like a row of silver, row of gold, and that's very beautiful. And there was no way to set these things down. They never provided a base that you could put blood down on, except for the bezichei levona of lechem aponim. Over there, they had to leave the levona on the shulchan for the whole week. And if they didn't have something that you could set them down on, you would put them on the shulchan. They would lean over against the lechem. Remember that the lechem was made in a very, very unique way, which was quite fragile and needed to be supported. And it would be possible that Shema Yanichum, if you put them up against the lechem might break. Lechem aponim yifros alechem, because of that, there they would have it. And then it says, Shachat Yisrael v'kibel kohen. Why does it say Shachat Yisrael? What, it has to be Yisrael? No, it means you could even have a Yisrael that would be Mekabel Adam. That's all it means. And V'kibel HaKohen, that's teaching you that at that point it has to be a Kohen. So it's the contrast that's important. Mekabel HaElech is indeed Mitzvat Kehuna. Now, it says that each guy gave it to the next guy, but that would mean that nobody walked. And that would mean that halacha shelo beregel havia halacha. There's a whole question that we have in Zvachim. Can you use a simple movement without having to walk? Or is the mitzvah of holacha literally holacha, not just to get it there, but to walk it there? Over here, nobody's walking. They're just handing it on. One guy's handing it on to the next guy. So it seems over here that it would be okay. But Dilma hu nayit purta, maybe the kohen moves, he moves with his foot, which would be really nice kind of movement. Barum, barum, barum. This is the way the Chafetz Chaim learns that in his Pirushan Kachim, all of the Kohanim would move. So we'd be going, that was really nice. But many of the Rishonim say only the last Kohen that has to get it to the Mizbeach is the one that has to do Halacha Baragel. So maybe only the last one would move. Anyway, but then what would be the point? My Kamashma, why is the Mishnah need to say this, that there were these roads and everything? It's just telling us that that's beautiful, okay? Barov am hadras melech. You want to be mahader, the mitzvah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you try to get as many people involved as you possibly can.